From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a closer look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today On Deadline is looking at the virus that changed the world around us in profound ways. Of course, we're talking about COVID-19. A rush of new headlines arrived last week about the virus that once shut down the globe, including concerns about another summer resurgence, possible connections to cancer, and new information about its true villain origin story. Last week also marked a return to the spotlight for Dr. Anthony Fauci. He became a fixture on our living room screens just a few years ago. Fauci made his first appearance before Congress since leaving his position as the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases last year. Appearing before the House Select Subcommittee on the coronavirus pandemic, Fauci touched on numerous topics, including the country's preparedness for another pandemic, the origins of COVID-19, and even death threats he's endured since becoming the nation's face of the pandemic. While Republicans grilled Fauci over the origins of the virus, the former top doc refused to confirm renewed claims that the virus originated from a lab in China. He said, quote, "I cannot account, nor can anyone account, for other things that might be going on in China, which is the reason why I have always said, and will say now, I keep an open mind as to what the origin is. That's a mystery from the past that still remains unsolved. But because those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it, Fauci's testimony also touched on the future. What would happen if the world faced another overwhelming and deadly new virus? Fauci said that in some respects, we're better positioned to deal with another pandemic, but that in others, he was still disappointed. Bob Moffitt is a senior research fellow at the Center for Health and Welfare Policy at the Heritage Foundation. He joined Odyssey to update us on what was revealed in Fauci's testimony.
Well, you know, it was a big hearing. It covered a lot of stuff yesterday. The business about the recommendations to the states is not, as a matter of fact, recommendations to the states on public health issues is a function of the CDC. It is not a function of the National Institutes of Health. We all know that. I think you're saying that Fauci was such an influential figure in all of this. But remember, certainly in the first year where Fauci was one of the top advisors, I mean, the man he reported to was Donald Trump. And Donald Trump, basically made the first recommendations for restrictions at the state and local level. And frankly, states followed different paths. I mean, Florida took a radically different path from New York and California. So did Texas, frankly. So you had different public health officials on the ground responding the way they are supposed to respond. I mean, some of them, you know, looking at their primary responsibility, making decisions that they thought were best for the people on the ground. So I don't think you can charge him with, you know, basically overriding CDC. I think the problem, though, is that if he had any serious reservations about any of this, certainly he was in a position simply because of the fact that he had been such a major figure in allergy and infectious diseases for so many years, going back to 1984, actually, that he would have been able to make his views known to President Trump. But obviously, he went along with the CDC. There's no question about that.
Yeah, I mean, what I really was turned off at, how many times did you hear the words follow the science? How many times did he say it? And all the while, you know, we now recognize when they ask him about social distancing and masking, that his response is, I don't know where that came from. It just kind of appeared on the landscape of the discussion and the dialogue that we were having. And it's like, excuse me? That gets confused with science?
Actually, the six foot social distancing business, as he pointed out, came from an analysis of droplets opposed to aerosolized viral infections. But that was, again, a CDC recommendation. And it, in fact, really did not have any recent scientific support. My recollection, and I could be wrong on this, Newell, but my recollection is that CDC actually got that idea, you know, from a very, very old study in Germany, having to deal with a droplet exposure in viral infections. At the very beginning of this thing, and you were quite right to point out, at the very beginning, we didn't know anything. A lot of this, we thought, for example, incorrectly, a lot of people thought, including CDC, that the virus could be transmitted from hard surfaces. There was absolutely no truth to that. We didn't know that at the time, and we were frightened to death. And as a result of that, you know, we started taking excessive measures.
Despite the worst fears of the pandemic being in the rearview mirror for most of us, some health experts are worried that we could see another summer resurgence of the virus. So, what danger are we really in? Should we start stocking up on masks and gloves again? To share more on the potential threat, Dr. Peter Chin Hong, an infectious disease specialist at UC San Francisco, joined Odyssey in Los Angeles.
Where we are is really seeing a slight uptick in all the metrics that we have available. And, you know, the key point is that these are metrics that we have available. And these include wastewater epidemiology, of course, emergency room visits, and death. But the deaths have remained relatively stable. But what we're seeing is really wastewater test positivity and emergency department visits.
What about in terms of variants? There was a time, as you know, because we used to talk about this quite a bit on the air, when it seemed like there was a new variant of concern almost every week. Now, that's an exaggeration, but they did seem to become a pretty normal kind of thing with COVID. We haven't really heard much about variants. Why is that?
Well, I think because no clear leader of the pack has emerged until now from the fray. Every 6 months or so, we get one uppity little variant that kind of decimates the others, and we're seeing this pattern again. I think the reason why you probably are not hearing as much about it is because, frankly, people are not paying as much attention as they used to, but the virus will continues to evolve, and that hasn't stopped.
Now, when you say people aren't paying as much attention to COVID as they used to, I think you mean by that that they're not really testing the way they used to.
Yeah, they're not testing. You know, people conjure it up to allergies or maybe the cold. And frankly, if you test and you're positive, you become persona non grata at the family reunion you want to go to or the big trip you're planning.
Well, but does it matter that people aren't testing? Are we at the point with COVID where people, they are treating it almost like the common cold, but is that a bad thing for them to be doing?
I think it probably is not the best thing at this point still. And the reason why is that, you know, there's still vulnerable people in our community that probably it would make a difference whether or not they knew that they had COVID around them or in their environs, particularly if you're living at home and you're living with elderly parents or grandparents or people who are immune compromised in your family unit or friend unit. It becomes really important if you are one of those people. And that's because the way I see it right now is that the world is divided into two groups of people. The majority of folks, you know, it's really going to be mild. But for a minority, and that number is not small when there's a surge, people are still getting very sick.
Then there's this. According to a report from the Washington Post, a group of doctors have called for research into a potential connection between COVID-19 and a recent increase in rare cancers that have started popping up in young people. While no study has yet to be conducted, researchers are arguing that there is compelling enough evidence to warrant further research. Dr. Chin Hong also joined Odyssey in the Bay Area to discuss this latest revelation.
When I first read the headline, I thought for sure this was because most people just put off doctor's visits during the pandemic shutdown. Is that part of the answer, or is there something different going on here, do you suspect?
Well, the answer is definitely complicated. Certainly, I think most people can understand that people put off healthcare. There is some data that more later stage cancers were being diagnosed, which suggests that some people were, you know, not having the same access they had to healthcare so that the cancers progressed in the interim, missed chemo appointments, et cetera. But I think what you're also talking about is some other observations that have been made, which is some more rare cancers, particularly in young people that have been emerging. And certainly there's a biological plausibility why infections may lead to cancer.
So what are the right questions to ask? We don't have answers yet, but you got to ask the right questions.
Yeah, so Patty, that's a great overall question. So to me, who studies infectious diseases, including its risk as in terms of cancer, you know, I think about certain things. You know, is the infection persistent? Usually the infections we think about that lead to cancer, human papillomavirus or HPV, Epstein-Barr virus, and hepatitis B, they kind of hide out in the body for a while and lead to some dysregulation that eventually arises in cancer. There is some evidence that COVID can persist, particularly in those with long COVID. So there's a little bit of plausibility, but not a ton of data yet. The second question I would have is, what's happening with the immune system with COVID? We know that the immune system can be dysregulated with people who got severe COVID. And we know that the immune system is also really super important for cancer because it not only stops up infection, it sort of moderates the risk for getting cancer by attacking misshapen and non-functional cells. So I think that's the second question. And the third is, how does inflammation lead to a risk for cancer? Because we know that in other scenarios, inflammation and the inflammatory cascade can lead to an increase in the potential for cancer in other settings. So these are some questions that I have.
I guess my question is, and it might be not very smart, and that is, what comes first, cancer or the virus? I mean, we heard from a doctor earlier today who has diabetes, and she was talking about patients with diabetes often suffering worse outcomes if they catch a virus, including COVID.
Yes, no, that's a very astute question, Brett. And there is some evidence that some people who had sort of cancer hiding out and maybe the immune system was keeping it under check. Once you get infected, we know that with influenza, once you get influenza, just regular flu, you're susceptible to a lot of other stuff later on. So it also is plausible that if you have pre-cancer or some early stages of cancer, that by getting the insult of infection and the sort of dysregulation of the immune system, which is no longer working well, that sort of latent cancer might come alive, so to speak.
The country officially ended its COVID national emergency more than a year ago, but questions still remain. Did social distancing work? What are the long-term effects on our health and the lives of kids whose education and social lives were upended? One of the most intriguing COVID-19 mysteries that remains is the one about its origin. Where the heck did this virus come from? At the center of the mystery is the kind of question that could fuel a Hollywood whodunit. Did the virus jump from an animal to a human, or did it come from a freak laboratory accident? The AP noted in a report last week that the hunt for the origin of COVID-19 has gone dark in China. That's after a series of thwarted attempts to find the source of the virus that killed millions and paralyzed the world. Mark Woolhouse, a University of Edinburgh outbreak expert, said, "It's disturbing how quickly the search for the origins of COVID-19 escalated into politics. Now this question may never be definitively answered. It may seem like a straightforward question, but COVID's origins are a hot potato with potentially widespread geopolitical effects." An AP investigation found that bureaucrats in Wuhan, China, where the virus famously originated, tried to avoid blame while the Chinese government muzzled its scientists and the UN Health Agency may have compromised opportunities to gather critical information by placating China. Alina Chan, a molecular biologist at MIT, wrote an in-depth piece in the New York Times last week that said partisan politics have derailed the search for the truth about a catastrophe that touched pretty much everybody. She believes the virus escaped from a research lab in Wuhan, one that was working with the EcoHealth Alliance, a U.S.-based scientific organization that was awarded over $80 million in federal funding to research the risks of emerging infectious diseases. If that's where it came from, it would be the most costly accident in the history of science. Scientists warn that willful blindness over coronavirus's origins, even if it's for the sake of keeping the peace, leaves the world vulnerable to yet another outbreak. Because, as Mark Twain said, history doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.